Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Dean's List, a podcast that celebrates the art of conversation with your host, Dean Latticer.
Thank you, George. Good morning, everyone. You are on the Dean's List. I'm your host, Dean Latticer. Thanks for tuning by us today. I am sincerely looking forward to today's show. We've also got some great news about some things going on in my world that I hope you'll want to take advantage of. But let's jump in, shall we? Susan Bennett is my guest this morning, and while many of you may recognize her as the voice behind Siri's Apple software, she does more than simply give us directions and insights from the palm of our hands. She's also there to greet passengers at Delta Gates worldwide. She helps people to discover the better ingredients in pizza and makes the mission possible. She's a multi-talented professional, an accomplished singer, a polished and professional spokesperson, a talented MC, and an accomplished communicator who has assisted corporations and organizations to achieve their communication goals. She also takes her iconic role as the world's foremost voice assistant with a warm smile and a sense of humor. And I'm looking forward to this. As I was telling Susan in the warm-up here, because I've done voiceover work and been a broadcaster, I would have had her on just for that. But because there is a little bit of history there, and that's one of the things that's fun and interesting is to learn the untold story. But before you think we're going to go for a half an hour just on Siri stories, please know that I've asked Susan on because of the whole person concept of what she has to share. And you don't talk much with voiceover artists. Instead, they just kind of are the soundtrack of our lives. And that's a good thing, place, to jump in. So let's welcome Susan to On the Dean's List. Good morning.
Hello.
I'm delighted that you're here this morning. And in the interest of full disclosure, you actually connected to me on social media first, and I was blown away by it. And I asked you to come join us on the podcast here. I'm always delighted to my fellow voiceover folks here, and it just kind of blossomed from there. So,
yes, social media. I'm still trying to get motivated to use it a little bit more. My son is involved with a social media company called Fanbase, and so they help me with that. With all. Speaking of communicating.
Let's talk about the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is that you have played one of the most iconic roles ever, and it's as close as our tablets, our laptops, our smartphones. Kind of just give us the Reader's Digest condensed version. How did you get to be the voice of Siri?
You know, I don't know. It remains a mystery. I like to call it being accidentally famous, because I really didn't do anything to aspire to this type of thing. I had worked for years with a company doing messaging, and they got involved in doing this new stuff called text-to-speech work, and which is, you know, IVR, you know, communicating with robotic voices. This all started in 2005, and I, along with many other voice talent, recorded thousands of phrases and sentences to get all of the sound combinations in the language. And afterwards, technicians and computers, of course, go in and extract sounds and reform new sentences. This is called concatenation. And this is the process by which all of these companies went through to get the answers on your smartphones and all other digital devices. So that's the whole process, and consequently, after doing this work, the voices were just sort of out there. So I have absolutely no idea how my voice was chosen, or in essence, who really chose it, because what most people don't know is that Apple did not create Siri. The app was created by three engineers/inventors, and then Apple bought the app from them and developed it. So I have no idea who chose the voice, how this happened, and as far as I know, Apple ain't talking.
Nope, they are a very secretive company, and I think one of the interesting parts of it is that audio forensic experts that CNN hired have verified with 100% certainty that you are the one there.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question. There are some people who might have taken the approach like, please, don't tell anybody on this. I still want to be able to go check out at the supermarket and do my things. And then other people who probably their egos would have gotten all puffed about it. Where do you sit on this? Is it an honor, or is it like, well, you know, it comes with the turf? Or how do you feel about being the voice of Siri?
Well, I'll have to say it was definitely a life lesson. When I first discovered, I mean, when Siri first appeared on October 4th, 2011, that's the first time I realized that she had my voice. So I was not under contract to Apple or anything like that. I had no idea that this had happened. And so consequently, I felt really ambivalent. On one hand, as you said, I really felt very flattered. I mean, basically, I had been chosen to be the voice of Apple in North America. And on the other hand, it was like, wait a minute. How did this happen? How did they get my book? What? And so from that aspect, I really sort of wanted to hide. And that's the reason that it took me 2 years to reveal myself. I really went through a lot of changes over it, trying to decide whether the information would help or hurt me. Because as I'd mentioned to you earlier, in the digital age, it's important for us voice talent, unless we're celebrities, I mean major celebrities, to be anonymous and and rely on the sound of our voice and our performance via auditions to get us work. And consequently, if everyone knows that I'm Siri, they'll say, we need a nice young voice, and, you know, that Siri voice sounds like this. So, you know, people really do have a tendency to just to identify you with one particular thing, if that's what you're known for. So it really was it took me a long time to adjust to it, I'll have to say. But at this point in time, I'm actually really having a lot of fun with it. And I've had a lot of really fun experiences that I never would have had had I not been the original voice of Siri. So
give us a couple of what are the more interesting things when you have this as your calling card, that have you had people come up and say, oh, Susan, you wake me up every morning, or something like that, or what's it like?
No, to tell you the truth, most of the really fun experiences have been TV appearances, and I was able to read the top 10 list for David Letterman one time, and appeared on the Queen Latifah show, Showbiz Tonight, all these things that were kind of fascinating. And so that from that point, it was really fun. And I've also kind of developed a new career based on Siri, because I do a lot of presentations about Siri. But as far as people recognizing me, my regular speaking voice doesn't really sound like Siri. In the 4 years that my voice has been around in that capacity, only one person has said, and it was a guy in the bank, a banker. And I went in to talk to him about my account, and he said, boy, your voice sounds familiar. And I thought, really? And we talked, and he said, yeah, my son has this iPhone. And I thought, wow, this guy's got really good ears. Because for the most part, you know, I just sound like Susan Bennett. But when I go down here, I sound a little more like the person you know.
Oh, I love it. Let me ask you, did you see the movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson? And what did you think of that?
Oh, I really hate to say.
Go ahead. It's just you and I.
I really didn't care for the movie itself, although I thought it was, you know, visually really interesting, and I thought the acting was great. At the time that it came out, which was a couple of years ago, and I was even invited to speak at the, you know, at the preview here in Atlanta. Basically, the you know, Spike Jonze had taken the idea of, you know, the IVR of the, you know, the virtual assistant, much closer to artificial intelligence than, of course, our devices provide us today. But it's true that all the major corporations are heading that way, and boy, that's another whole topic. But you know, I do appreciate the fact that they had the main character falling in love with this you know, with this assistant and establishing some sort of relationship with her, because in the years that I have, you know, been around and talking to people about Siri, I'm really amazed that people really do have a relationship with this app. They consider, many people consider her a friend, and they don't really just think of her as the phone. They think of her as a real person. So I think that he, you know, Spike Jonze really grasped that concept, you know, when he made the movie.
More of a social commentary. I know the fact that Scarlett Johansson's voice was dubbed in later. They had a different actress who did the original take on it. Well, if Spike had come and asked you, hey, you're the one, you know, yeah, obviously Scarlett's got a little more headline, but would you have consented to do that role?
Oh, of course. Yeah, what an experience. Yeah, what an experience. But
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, it probably, you know, he would, to see, this is the thing where the stereotyping comes in, because the original Siri voice, well, she was iconic because she was the first concatenated voice to sound human, and it was the first virtual assistant that you could really interact with. She still wasn't, you know, people get frustrated with the fact that she doesn't always understand them or gives them wrong directions. I jokingly like to say, well, she does that on purpose. She's a jokester. But you, when you think about, you know, the amazing technology, we're so used to just, you know, hitting a button, having things happen, that we don't really consider what went into developing that. And so if you consider how, what a daunting task it would be for Siri to be able to recognize every accent, every regionalism, you know, every you know, anomaly of speech, it's just, you know, seems impossible. I'm sure they'll do it at some point, but, you know, it really is an amazing technological feat.
Well, I have Lattice's Law of Technology, and my friends will tell you, I cite this all the time, and it's that technology is a wonderful servant, but a cruel master, or cruel mistress, as the case may be.
Yes.
And well, we're gonna move in the next segment over into your career about voiceover stuff. But I want to take a quick pause here, and especially a lot of new listeners. I'm always excited that folks like Susan bring out the best in our audience. And for the regular listeners, I'm glad you folks we picked this up again. We've got a couple of great shows coming up. Last week we had our Pistons insider Ryan Deitch on. We've got two shows this week. We're recording this one. And then Allison Martiniak, the former morning show host at 96.3 DVD, and she was on Dish Nation for a while. Well, about 6 months ago, the folks at Cumulus said thank you, but no thank you. So this is one of her first public sharings about what happened and what she's been doing after that. So we're looking forward to having Allison on. And then the show that debuts next week, old friend Rosh Sillers. We're going to talk about market hacking, using today's technology to expand your business, to drive new markets. And that's going to be a preview of a seminar that's coming up here in southeastern Michigan on the 11th of February. And we'll have more details on that show specifically. But we're always excited, and by all means, if you're on the Blog Talk Radio page or on the Facebook page, make sure you favor us so you'll always find out who's coming on the Dean's List. Let's jump back into it now with Susan Bennett. Susan, we're going to put Siri on the shelf here and talk about some of the other work that you've done, because your voice, you've worked with a lot of different organizations over the years. Delta Gates, you're welcoming people on. I think my favorite one, though, was in reading one of your biographies, is that you were Tilly the all-time teller for First National Bank of Atlanta.
Yes, that was my first appearance as a machine.
Oh.
Actually, it was another sort of iconic thing. Back when ATMs were first introduced, which is, you know, in the late 70s, I didn't realize it was that long ago, but no one wanted to use them because, and I know that it's hard for some of your listeners to appreciate this, but, you know, at that time, no one had personal computers, let alone, you know, smartphones. And people were very skeptical of getting their money out of a machine. And so none of the ATMs, no one was using the ATMs. So a brilliant advertising agency in Atlanta called McDonald and Little came up with an idea to personalize the machine. So they called her Tilly, the all-time teller, and put a face on the machine. And I was the jingle singer who sang the Tilly jingle. And so my voice was associated with Tilly, the all-time teller, and she became the first successful ATM in the nation. And other people, other banks started using this same idea of personalizing the machine. And so, yeah. Yep, Tilly is close to my heart.
Well, one of the things about it is that, you know, in my research, that's where you started. You were more of a performer and a vocalist. You were in an a cappella group called the Chatterrocks?
Chattertalks, yeah, that was at Brown University.
Yeah.
And, I also worked with a band at Berklee School of Music while I was in college. So I was very music-oriented, and music still remains a huge influence in my life, probably the key influence in my life. And so I got into voiceover accidentally. Back in the 70s and 80s, we used to do a lot of jingle singing. Groups of people would gather around the microphone, and 4 to 6 people would sing jingles. And now a lot of the advertising companies seem to use old rock and roll, or old pop music for jingles. But back in the day, they used to actually hire singers. And one day the voice talent didn't show up, and the owner of the studio said, "Well, Susan, you don't have an accent. Come over here and read this copy." And so I thought, oh, okay. And I did it. I realized that I could do it with, you know, pretty easily. And so I found a great vocal coach, voice coach, and then got an agent. And I've been doing voiceovers ever since.
It's an interesting industry. I worked with a gentleman up in Grand Rapids, Rick Steele, and I put him on my Mount Rushmore of voiceover talents because, again, he owned the production house. He had just one of those iconic voices. And it's different because I don't think people understand. You're sitting in a padded room. You've got this mic. You've got this easel full of copy there. And you've got like a creative director from an ad agency saying, "Be more like Tom Hanks. Put a little more swagger in it. Okay, back off a little bit." People don't understand that you're really working hard and you're changing inflection and tone and intonation in order, maybe hitting a certain, emphasis on a certain syllable or
right.
that idea of that. And you're trying and riffing stuff. People, I don't think, appreciate the work that goes in to trying to nail, 29.2 seconds worth of copy.
Right. I think there so many people now, especially because of the web and the fact that the voiceover industry itself has gotten a lot more publicity of late. Everyone really wants to be a voice talent, and it is a lot of fun. But like any other job, you have to work. You have to work at it. It does require certain abilities. You've got to be able to read. You've got to be able to read cold, which is especially hard at this point in time because no one really knows how to punctuate anymore. So back in the day, when they used to have to. And your listeners are not even going to believe this, but back in the day when we had to record on tape, and they would have to splice the tape, they'd have to cut the tape and delete whatever went wrong and then splice it back together. Consequently, they wanted the talent to be able to read big chunks of copy without making a mistake. And so it was an interesting thing as technology has made it much more easy edit and do that kind of work. It's easier on the voice talent too.
We're not
going to
talk about edit all splicing blocks, but I think I came across an old aluminum edit all splicing block with a razor blade knife and having to be able to cut things together. That was a skill that in these days when you look at the sound waves of stuff and you can shave an or shave a pregnant
right.
pause or a miss. Breath today, I know this is the voiceover equivalent of saying I had to walk 16 miles through the woods in shin-high
right.
snow to get to school, but it's true. I mean,
it is true.
GarageBand. I'm not going to plug another Apple app here, but the idea of if our listeners have ever played on GarageBand, oh my God! I mean, I was totally blown away the first time I was able to digitally edit something out, a lip smack, a misplaced breath. It's just
right.
incredible what they can do, and then you look at doing things to enhance voices, the digital enhancements. We won't talk about what they do over on the singing side, but with the Vodafone.
Right, right.
Stuff like that. But what's the biggest change? I know we were talking on the pre-show about just the way people are perceived and the ability on work, and you've said yourself that you've had to take more non-union work just to on that, and just the technology has changed the industry, some for the good, some for the bad, as we're talking about here. Talk about your experiences, because you do have a body of work that's worth looking at, and you know, talking, you've earned your stripes, Susan, you really have.
Well, thank you. Yes, the voiceover industry has been revolutionized primarily by technology. Because of that, because of the web, and because of the publicity of the voiceover business, there's so much competition. And also the fact that, you know, because I don't know how this happened really specifically by technology, but it seems to be just the general feeling of the country and the world is to go non-union. Everybody wants everything quick and fast, and nobody wants to pay residuals, which has really, really hurt the business, and it's really, really hurt the income of people who are making a living as voice talent. So much of the work has gone non-union, which is really a shame, because basically the premise of the union is, well, you get paid X amount of dollars, and then when they use your voice again after a certain period of time, you get paid again. So, you know, and this seems to be the type of thing that corporations are moving away from. Even large corporations that could very easily afford union work. But the system itself has changed. Back in the day when I was about 15 years ago or so is when it really, really started to change. But the work that I used to do, so many of the commercials that I did, well, no, 100% of the commercials that I did went through my agency, Atlanta Models and Talent at the time, and I was exclusive with them, and so it was part of their job to promote me. And so, you know, I would get these wonderful auditions, the prospective clients would listen to the agent's advice about different talent. When you auditioned, the client would tell the agent, well, we're looking specifically for this, and the agent would give them maybe 5 to 10 people, maybe as many as 20. But in this day and age, when we audition, we're auditioning against hundreds of people because we don't know where the audition is going. Many of us have to be signed up with multiple agents, and many people are working non-union and signed up with companies like Voice123 or Voices.com. So we never really know where all of these are going, and because there are so many people auditioning, you're not even really sure if your audition is being heard. And so it really is, it's kind of turned into like the voiceover Wild West. We don't, you know, the system doesn't no longer in place. You know,
Susan, I got to take a quick break here, and then we can. Then we've only got a little time to wrap up. I want to make our audience aware of an upcoming event. If you're in southeastern Michigan or southern Ontario or northern Ohio, I invite you to join us for Michigan Sales Forward, a leadership and empowerment experience. That's coming up on Thursday, January 21st in downtown Detroit at the DoubleTree Fort Shelby Hotel. One of the reasons I'm sharing this with you is that I'm presenting at it. I'm doing business networking mistakes and how to avoid them. Our friend Raj Sillers, he's going to give his market hacking talk, a friend of the program, Michael Wickett, speaker, trainer, and sales coach. He's going to be doing the keynote on them. So I invite you to go to Michigan Sales Forward. I wanted to Bill Lonsky and the folks over at Quintessential Event, I appreciate them letting us be a part of it. And I just wanted to get a quick mention in here of that. Susan, this has been a fast half hour here. I do want to ask you a question. In sports talk radio, they have this premise where they ask people, if you were going to do your Mount Rushmore of Detroit Tigers or going to do your Mount Rushmore of L.A. Dodgers or something like that, I'm going to ask the question this way. If you were going to do a Mount Rushmore of voiceover talent, people that you love to listen to or you think just really do it well, I know, for example, Earl Nightingale, he's more of a speaker or a trainer, or Ken Nordine's, or this woman named Ziska, who I just think, oh, her voice is like butter. Who would you put on your Mount Rushmore?
Oh, boy, that's a really hard question, because for the most part, I don't really know the names of a lot of these people. I will notice people on TV and radio at times. I'll hear their voices and think, wow, that person's got a great voice. I guess I'm more of a movie buff in the sense that I'll notice people's voices, of course.
So if you hear a Susan Sarandon, that might be a better example of it. If you hear somebody like that or an Alec Baldwin, that might kind of perk your curiosity or such.
No, not really, because I don't necessarily gear into to noticing their voices particularly. I mean, I may not be able to place. That's a very strange question for me, because I don't really know how to answer that. I've met a lot of wonderful people at different voiceover conferences, and people that there's so many voice talent that are incredibly talented, incredibly versatile, that no one really knows about. Most of them are pretty much behind the scenes. So for me, it's really hard to say. That's too tough a question for me, Dean.
I'm fine with it. It's just sometimes you want to ask people interesting things, and that I thought was an interesting angle to go at. Well, you're fully active on social media. Like I said, we initially connected on Twitter. What I'd like for you to do is feel free, especially if there's any creative directors listening in today or people who do assign this work. How do we get in touch and stay in touch with Susan Bennett? Tell us the best ways to stay in touch with you, especially in the social media world.
Well, the first thing you can do is go to my website and find out that I don't always have to sound like Siri. So that would be Susan at SusanCBennett.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Seriously Susan, and that's Seriously, S-I-R-I. Very clever. And
yes.
I'm also on Facebook, but I've just been using Facebook really for people that I know personally, although my son, who's very involved in social networking, is trying to convince me otherwise.
Well, I haven't put together a professional page for you, I'm sure, because I also do some work with Rosh over at a digital marketing agency called Rosh Media. So, it can be a great tool. Again, Lattister's Law of Technology, wonderful servant, cruel master. And I guess that's where we're going to have to leave it today. There's only one thing left for me to say, and that's, Susan Bennett, you are on the Dean's List.
Well, thank you so much.
For joining
I appreciate
me today.
It.
It's too fast a half an hour here, but, I invite everybody listening to join us again. Again, this week, Allison Martiniak from 96.3 DVD going to join us, or formerly of that, Ross Sillers in 2 weeks. And then we've also got some other great people, so make sure you connect to us on social media so you can find out who's coming up on the Dean's List. I'm your host, Dean Lattister. Until next time, it's been this time. Thanks for joining us.